This summer, the Supreme Court sided with Native groups in ruling that the United States must recognize the eastern half of Oklahoma as tribal territory. Now, around one quarter of the state's recent oil and gas wells are situated on tribal land. And that's left Oklahoma's oil and gas producers scrambling to respond to the decision. But last week, the industry was handed a much-needed reprieve when the Environmental Protection Agency gave the state of Oklahoma more authority to regulate tribal lands. For more on what the EPA's decision will mean, I'm going to talk to Rebecca Nagel, citizen of the Cherokee Nation, journalist and host of the podcast This Land. Rebecca, thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what exactly did the EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler decide in terms of giving Oklahoma, the state of Oklahoma, more authority over the environment and these lands in particular?
Yeah, so to understand what happened this week, we actually have to go all the way back to 2005. So in that year, a senator from Oklahoma, Senator Inhofe, attached a rider to a very long and mostly in the weeds transportation bill. And it was just, you know, a couple sentences that gave the state of Oklahoma regulatory authority over reservations within the state if it so asked for. And so this had not been enacted. It had sat dormant for 15 years. And then on July 9th, the Supreme Court ruled that Congress had never disestablished the reservation of Muscogee Creek Nation. And even though the state of Oklahoma had not recognized that reservation for over a century, that it was still legally Indian land. And so, you know, I think one thing it's really, really important for a lot of folks to realize is that tribal jurisdiction, including civil jurisdiction, which regulatory authority falls under, is already extremely limited by the Supreme Court. And so a lot of the fears that we saw from oil and gas during this case were quite overblown. And also, I just think dishonest, you know, during the court proceedings, oil and gas, you know, we're sort of running around like Chicken Little saying if Muscogee Creek Nation wins, the sky is going to fall down, knowing full well the whole time that they had this rider in their back pocket. You know, and unfortunately, because we have a very pro-oil state and a pro-oil EPA, it didn't take long for them to get it enacted.
I want to play a clip here from Oklahoma Governor Stitt, who first requested environmental control from the EPA back in July.
I want tribes to be very successful, but not at the expense of non-tribal businesses. And I believe over the long haul, if we don't have a level playing field, if we don't understand what the rules are, we will not have non-tribal businesses growing and establishing and coming and expanding in eastern Oklahoma.
Rebecca, why is Stitt or Governor Stitt so concerned about, is there a non-level playing field right now? And if there is, I would imagine it tilts in favor of non-tribal businesses, not the other way around.
Exactly. Tribal jurisdiction is extremely complicated on reservations, but to summarize, tribes have very, very little regulatory authority over non-native businesses because of a series of court decisions that came out in the early 80s. And what we see happen over and over and over again in Indian country is that this fear, and I think we really have to call it overblown white panic. And I think we also have to talk about it as being racist, as this idea that tribal governments are inferior and would do a worse job of having regulatory authority than the state of Oklahoma that has deregulated fracking to the point that now in Oklahoma we have man-made earthquakes, right? And within that, because of the way the Supreme Court has already limited tribal jurisdiction, we see over and over again, you know, tribes actually trying to, you know, prevent non-native corporations from polluting their lands, prevent non-native corporations from dumping toxic waste and from, you know, mining uranium and things like that. And very, very often, those corporations get away with it anyways. You know, Oklahoma is the site of one of the biggest Superfund sites right now that the EPA is still failing to adequately clean up. You know, here in northeastern Oklahoma on Quapaw land, there are chat piles of from lead and zinc mining that are so large you can see them from Google Earth, you know. And this is what, you know, it mostly fell on the BIA. But there's a long history of even where tribal reservations and regulatory authority is recognized, non-Native corporations getting away with behavior like that. And so this idea that tribes having jurisdiction would cause chaos, would wreak havoc, is the same argument Oklahoma has been making throughout the many years history of this case. I think what we need to do is that Congress needs to fix that rider. So Congress has the authority to reverse what Inhofe snuck in a very undemocratic process without the consultation or knowledge of tribes or really anybody else from Oklahoma. And so, you know, we need to talk about fixing that.
I'm speaking with journalist Rebecca Nagel about a recent EPA decision to give the state of Oklahoma authority over many environmental issues on tribal lands. But that's just one of the issues on the minds of many Native voters this year. Here's what some of those listeners had to say.
My name's Casey from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I would love to see any politicians really recognize First Nations existence and issues have it part of their platform.
My name is Linda Little Bear, and I live in Hopewell, New Jersey. My people are the Penobscot from Maine. I would like to see them get better medical care, and I would like reparations from the United States government. People don't realize that 100 million of us were slaughtered, 100 million. And to be honest, I hold out near no hope that your government will help us.
You can keep calling us to tell us your thoughts on that at 877-8-MY-TAKE. That's 877-869-8253. And I'm joined again now by Rebecca Nagel. Thanks for staying on the line with me, Rebecca.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So we heard a couple of calls up there, and I'm wondering, you know, as far as what you're hearing from our callers, does that sort of align with what you're hearing from people, from Native voters heading into this election?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that's important to underscore is that Indian Country is an incredibly diverse place. There are over 570 federally recognized tribes in the United States. We're in different states, different regions. We have different cultures and histories and language. And even within our own tribes, if one thing is true about Native people, we have a lot of different viewpoints. But I do think that within that, the coronavirus pandemic has hit tribes and hit Indian Country really hard and is absolutely an issue that people are focused on. You know, we are still seeing tribes and Indian health services and urban Indian health centers struggle to get basic needs, basic supplies, and with a second relief or a third relief package now being stalled for over 100 days. I think a lot of tribes are really looking for leadership at the national level that will bring that needed relief.
Rebecca, of course, we know we continue to battle the coronavirus in this country. We also know that communities of color have been disproportionately affected. That includes Native communities. Where does that stand for this population as we head into really the fall and the winter as far as an election issue?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is absolutely an election issue. And I think oftentimes the disproportionate impact of COVID-19 on Native Americans is left out of the national conversation, whether it's the media coverage, the policy discussion, and we're finding that it's even happening in the data collection itself. So in a lot of counties and states are categorizing Native COVID patients as other instead of actually capturing the data.
And we is already that typical?
Yes, it's actually very common. There are some studies that have shown that up to half of Native patients are miscategorized as the wrong race in hospital records. And we see that even on vital records. So one study, and vital records are things like birth and death certificates. In one study, they found that about a third of people are miscategorized on their vital records. And so when we think about how coronavirus is impacting Indian country, we know that it is having a disproportionate impact. And then we are also experiencing a second crisis where we're being erased from the data. And that informs policy conversations. It informs the allocation of resources. So it's something that absolutely needs to be addressed.
So far, we're a little less than a month away from the presidential election. And I'm wondering what you're hearing from, if anything, from Joe Biden's campaign and Kamala Harris's campaign about Native issues that's interesting or promising or not.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, you know, Biden does have a platform for Native issues. I would love to see it be more specific. I think during the primary, we saw a few platforms that really got into the weeds of policy that for me personally, I think every Democratic leader is going to say things like upholding the treaty and trust responsibility with tribes, living up to the promise that the United States has made to our tribes, respecting tribal sovereignty. But I think where the rubber really hits the road is what policy measures does that actually mean? And I would love to see a platform that's more specific to that.
One thing that has been addressed, at least, and we've talked about this extensively here on The Takeaway, is the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls in this country and beyond. We know that Savannah's Law was something that was just passed and had bipartisan support. What else needs to be done, Rebecca, in this particular issue as we head into this election?
Yeah. And so I think that Savannah's Act is a historic win. And we also have to recognize that it does kind of the bare minimum. You know, it's just going in and doing things like helping law enforcement collect good data and have actually the proper response when a Native woman goes missing and murdered, which is something that women who are white don't have to worry about, right? And what Native advocates have been calling for years is a full restoration of tribal jurisdiction. So right now, if you are non-Native and you go onto a reservation and you commit rape, you commit murder, you kidnap somebody, you abuse a child, the tribe is actually prohibited from prosecuting you because you are not Native. And while violent crime has dropped across the country in recent decades, it has skyrocketed in Indian country because of this jurisdictional loophole that was created by the Supreme Court. And so what we need to see Congress and the next administration do is go in and fix that. We have known for years that that is the main part of the answer to keeping Native women and children safe. And so we just need the political will to get it done.
One of the things that's come up also among the long list of issues that affect Native communities is representation. And as you mentioned earlier, data collection, the U.S. Census, but really also looking at voter suppression. What are some of the main issues that you're seeing with voter suppression?
You know, there was a really famous issue that came up in the midterms where Republicans were trying to defeat Heidi Heitkamp. They required that your ID that you use to vote in North Dakota could not have a P.O. box. It had to have a physical street address. And because many folks who live on reservations live in more remote areas that may not even have a street number, use P.O. boxes. And so, you know, we've seen things like that. There has been, you know, there was a very famous gerrymandering case that happened in Utah, where actually the Navajo Nation was able to use the Voting Rights Act to start a lawsuit about the representation on a county executive board there. And the way it tied to national issues that people might hear about is the Bears Ears National Monument. And so when President Trump said that he was upholding the wish of the local government to diminish that monument, it was actually the local representation misrepresented the many Native people who lived in that area because of the way that the area had been gerrymandered.
Rebecca Nagel is a journalist and a citizen of the Cherokee Nation, and she also hosts the podcast This Land. Rebecca, thanks for being with me.
Thank you so much for having me.
And let's remind our listeners that Rebecca was also on a panel for First Peoples Week here at WNYC's The Green Space, and you can find the recording for that at firstpeoplesweek.org.